Good afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome to the Linda, WAMC's Performing Arts Studio for today's debate between the candidates for New York's 19th Congressional District seat, Republican John Faso and Democrat Zephyr Teachout. I'm your moderator, Alan Chartok. In a moment, we'll begin our hour-long debate, but first I'd like to introduce our panelists and go over the ground rules. Making up our panel today are Casey Seiler, the state editor of the Albany Times-Union, Benita Zahn, the co-anchor of News Channel 13 Live at 5 and 6, our partner in today's debate, and WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn. You can follow today's debate on social media using the hashtag NY19Debate. We have asked the audience to hold its applause till the end of the hour, and the candidates have agreed to a few ground rules. There will be no opening or closing statements, as our time is precious. They will alternate questions. Each candidate will be given 3 minutes to answer a question. His or her opponent will then have 2-minute rebuttal. You will hear a bell ring like this when the time is up. The candidates determine who will go first by tossing a coin. Zephyr Teachout will begin. Our first question comes from Casey Seiler of the Times Union.
Thanks, Alan, and thanks very much to the candidates. Ms. Teachout, you cite overturning Citizens United and public campaign finance as priorities in terms of reforms you'd like to bring to campaign finance, yet your opponent has criticized you for taking campaign donations from the billionaire Soros family, and your federal disclosure shows that you raised more than $1.6 million through the end of June. Is your fundraising in conflict in any way with your policy position to remove or reduce big money from politics?
Not at all. And first of all, thank you all for hosting this debate. Thank you to John, and thank you to all of you who are here in person or listening or watching. I've spent my life fighting against big money in politics, and we really have a crisis of corruption in our country right now. We have that crisis in Albany, but also in Washington. And there's two different parts of it. One is just the basic way campaigns are funded. Congress isn't working right now, and one of the reasons Congress isn't working is because so many Congress members spend 40 to 70% of their time just raising money from rich people instead of actually dealing with the real issues like flood mitigation or supporting independent businesses or education policy or how we can support our family farms. They're not doing their job, they're working for their big donors. And the other problem is Citizens United, which sort of unleashed, allowed for big corporations to spend unlimited money in campaigns. These are super PAC contributions. My opponent, there's a super PAC that supports my opponent. There's two New York City hedge fund billionaires who've each given $500,000 to a super PAC supporting him. My campaign is supported by an average of $19. I'm really proud of the fact that we're grassroots funded. And I actually challenged John to a pledge. I asked him to join me in keeping all super PAC money out of this race so that we wouldn't have hedge funders like Paul Singer, who's a big free trader and a supporter of Common Core, putting in $500,000 in a race and really trying to buy a seat. John turned me down and, in fact, has said that Citizens United was the right decision. When I am in Congress, I'm going there to clean up Congress, to change the way campaigns are funded, and to fight for overturning Citizens United. And everything that I have done throughout my entire life shows that I will always work for the people, not the big corporations.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here as well, and I thank WAMC and WNYT and my opponent, Zephyr Teachout, for participating in this. I think these kind of forums are really important for the voters of our district, and they're important for our democracy. I think my opponent protests too much, however. She's raising big money from all sorts of people who are connected to super PACs, and she knows the law as well as I do, which is I have no control over what someone may spend or do independently. I would also point out that she wrote a book on corruption. And one of the things she said in her corruption, that the founders wanted to guide against adventurers moving into districts that they have no nexus to. Well, indeed, Ms. Teachout is an adventurer who just popped into the district. She parachuted in from Brooklyn. She just arrived and registered to vote in January of this year. She's got no connection to the district, no family, business, civic, charitable arrangements. I've lived and worked in this district for 33 years. My wife is the school nurse at our local public high school for more than 20 years. We are deeply enmeshed in the public life of our district, and I think if you want to represent people, you've got to be from here. You have to have some basis upon which you'll say, oh, I know this district. This is called the House of Representatives, not the House of Adventurers. And yes, Ms. Teachout's own book warned against adventurers. And she said adventurers were one of the things the founders wanted to guard against because adventurers moving into districts generated corruption. She has a very expansive view of corruption. I want campaign finance reform. I'd like full disclosure of anyone that gives money. But George Soros, big backer of hers, she didn't object in 2004 when George Soros spent $50 million, way before Citizens United, by the way, to try to defeat George W. Bush. So Citizens United, we're not running for the Supreme Court. We're running for the Congress. And her prescription is public financing, which is the thing most taxpayers don't want to have.
Candidates, thank you very much for being here today. Thank you. My question is for you, Mr. Faso. It's a long one, so.
It's not going to cut into my
I'll read slowly. On Wednesday, the House Committee on Science, Space, and Technology held a hearing on whether New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman is improperly disregarding a subpoena sent to his office in July. The subpoena sought materials concerning a multi-state investigation of whether Exxon may have misled shareholders about what its scientists were learning about the potential perils of climate change. Do you believe the Attorney General and others should be compelled to respond to these subpoenas? And do you believe the Exxon probe is valid or, as some conservatives have categorized it, a witch hunt that could chill scientific inquiry?
Well, I'm not familiar. I think that does present a challenge of the balance of laws or the conflict of laws, if you will. What the power of a House committee to compel via subpoena a independently elected state official, I think that's subject to a law review article, which I haven't either read or written yet. But let me say this. I do think that, unfortunately, this issue has been very politicized, and I think that's unfortunate. There's no doubt that climate change is real. There's no doubt that we should be trying to take efforts to mitigate it. New York, because we've replaced coal in electric generation with natural gas, for the last 20 years, we've reduced our CO2 emissions by about 20 to 25% in this state, all without due to market forces, not due to any intervention of the government. So I think that we need to pursue an energy policy that's a all-of-the-above energy policy that looks at renewables, and we have great, tremendous subsidies for renewables in state and federal law now, and I've supported those. But I also think we have to be cognizant that we have to make sure that any solution that we come to is one that's enforceable across international boundaries. And frankly, I don't really trust the Chinese, for instance, to abide by agreements that they enter into relating to climate change. We have to make sure that anything we agree to is not going to hurt our economy. You know, I have a program and a policy, a set of policy proposals to help the small business economy in this 19th congressional district, where, by the way, I've lived for 33 years. And I understand this district, and I understand the issues that they're facing. So we have to make sure that in a district like ours, where people rely on their cars, and they rely on their farm tractors to work and their cars to get to work, the fact is we need to make sure that any agreement that we enter into relating to climate change is not something that is going to disadvantage our economy and hurt our upstaters. You know, unlike Ms. Teachout, who just came here from Brooklyn, they have subways in Brooklyn. She's got natural gas in her apartment in Brooklyn. You know, a lot of the communities in our district don't have cheap energy. They have to drive to work. So these are the things. I want to make sure we're protecting our upstate economy, which is really hurting. And that's why if I'm elected to Congress, that's going to be job one. Jobs and improving the economy. That's the single most important thing we can do.
Thank you. Climate change and energy sources and protecting our water against big polluters is an area where we have a real difference. And voters in the 19th district have a real choice. I am so proud to have been part of one of the greatest environmental victories in recent history. The fracking ban in New York State. That didn't happen because of political elites. That happened because of extraordinary grassroots efforts, people raising the issues of the impacts of fracking on water, the impacts of fracking and compressor stations on air. I am opposed to fracking. John Faso, my opponent, not only is in favor of fracking, but has been paid by the big fracking companies, both as a spokesperson and as a lobbyist. And this really hits home right here, right next door in Rensselaer. I was working with people to stop the NED pipeline. I talked to so many people at meetings, at hearings, about their frustrations and fear that the compressor station would threaten the health of their kids, because we're talking about carcinogens coming out of this compressor station. John Faso was a paid lobbyist for the Tennessee Gas Company, which was pushing the NED pipeline project. I'm going to go to Congress to protect our water against the big polluters. John Faso has already shown which side he's on, and it's not on the side of the people of this district who care deeply about whether their kids can trust the water to drink. We have to care about the mom I was talking to in Nassau who was worried about her kid playing, if the compressor station came in. And when you're talking about Exxon, you're talking about a big polluter who's hired a whole bunch of lobbyists, like my opponent, John Faso, to push through subsidies and accept exemptions in the law.
Thank you.
It is now my turn to thank you both for being here, so thank you very much. And this question is for Ms. Teachout. Incumbent Congressman Chris Gibson pledged he would serve 4 terms, term limits on himself. In fact, he's retiring after 3. Ms. Teachout, you have said you support term limits, but have not publicly said, you have not specified a length. So will you publicly state a maximum number of terms you would serve? And just to point out that your opponent does not support term limits.
Yes. I support term limits. I would serve 5 terms. I think 10 years is enough to actually do the work that I want to do in Congress, but not so long that you become a career politician. And career politicians have not been serving our politics right now. I want to talk about the things that I can do in those 10 years. One of the most important things is standing up for independent businesses and family farms. And I've released a 7-point plan that would do just that. The core of the plan, though, is recognizing that both Republicans and Democrats have really abandoned the independent business owner and the family farmer over the last 3 decades. People talk, but when you actually look at what's happening on the ground, it's much worse. So you've seen a decline by as much as 40% of the smaller farms across the entire country, and that's in part because 75% of the subsidies are going to the really big concentrated farms, the one who can afford to hire lobbyists like my opponent. Same thing's happening with independent businesses. The true job creators, the smaller independent businesses that are really essential and the heart and soul of our communities have suffered in the last 30 years. So part one is we need to bring jobs home, support local farming. We need to make things in America again. My opponent is in favor of fast track for the Trans-Pacific Partnership and other trade deals. I am opposed to fast track, and I think we actually need to relook at all our trade deals so we can be manufacturing and making things here again. We can be assembling iPhones here. We can be actually doing a lot more of the essential work for putting together our shoes, our clothes, and the basics that we rely on right here. I think we have to be renegotiating NAFTA. And we have a $10 billion a year trade deficit with China. I think it's absolutely essential that when I'm in Congress, I'll be standing up against the kind of trade deals that my opponent has broadly supported. The second step is making sure that our banks are lending again. After the crash of 2008, I co-founded a group dedicated to breaking up the big banks, making them lend to our local communities. They're not lending. In fact, they're more concentrated and powerful and fragile than ever. In Congress, I'm going to be holding hearings, working on trying to break up those banks, supporting community banks, and making sure that our independent businesses are getting access to funds. I was talking to a 15-person business in Kingston. They've been in the black for 4 years. They can't get Bank of America to lend to them because they're too small. So what you hear over and over again is that access to capital is really essential for independent businesses, and they're just not getting it from the big banks. Thank
you. Well, the question was term limits. Yes, I support term limits. This is perhaps one of the areas where my opponent and I will agree. I would like to serve, if elected, an honor to serve. I'd like to serve no more than 5 terms as well, because I think I could get something done over that period of time. But in fact, when I ran for governor back in 2006, I proposed term limits for the state. Now, it's hard to unbundle all of the untruths and fabrications that Ms. Teachout just spewed to you. But number one, I've never been paid by a fracking company. I've never been a lobbyist for a fracking company. I did work as an outside consultant for Williams, which is a pipeline company, for a project that was supported by Chris Gibson and the local state legislators in our district. She wouldn't perhaps know that because she just arrived here from Brooklyn, as you might have heard. The fact is that I oppose the NED pipeline that was a Kinder Morgan project. Tennessee Gas, years ago, I had done some legal work for Tennessee Gas, but that long since ended, and in fact, Ms. Teachout, it ended well before Tennessee Gas was acquired by Kinder Morgan. So your fact checkers have to go back because maybe they came from Brooklyn, but they are mistaken in this regard. Her proposals for small business. Well, I'm endorsed by the National Federation of Independent Business, which is the largest small business organization in the country. And the reason is because I've got a concrete set of proposals to help small business. Number one, let a small business expense write off a full deduction against their taxes in year one, not within a depreciation schedule, but in year one. That will accelerate investment in machinery, in vehicles, and equipment that they need to operate their small business. That is vital that we do this. Ms. Teachout's first plank in her plan is she wants antitrust enforcement. Okay, after 10 years, maybe that might help some small business, maybe after 20, but not right away.
Mr. Faso, a question about the top of the ticket. You have not officially endorsed Donald Trump, his presidential bid, and you've been very critical of some of his statements, including about Khazir Khan, the Gold Star parent who spoke at the Democratic National Convention. However, you have referred to him as our candidate. You have said you will support your party's nominee, and now both of you will be running, of course, on the Republican line. Why haven't you officially endorsed Donald Trump in a state where both he and Ed Cox, the state party chair, have said they want to be competitive?
Casey, the answer to that question is that I've said right from the get-go when I started running, I announced my candidacy a year ago today on the front steps of our home in Kinderhook, where Mary Fran and I have lived our American dream, raised our kids. A year ago today, I announced my candidacy. And I said right from the get-go that I was going to support my party's nominee, and that's still the case. And I've also said that specific areas where I disagree with them, as you so well executed in your question. The reason I'm running has nothing to do with whether it's Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump who's elected president. I'm prepared to work in the model of Chris Gibson, who's endorsed me and strongly supports me in this race, with whomever is elected president. And I want to work across party lines to fix problems. I'm not interested in going to Washington to be a prognosticator or a pundit deciding, you know, who's running for president and things like that. I'm interested in fixing the problems that our district faces. Every single county in our district has lost population in the last 5 years. New York State, 1 million people have left New York State in the last 10 years. People are voting with their feet. Look around you, folks. Our kids and our grandchildren leave because they can't find jobs, and seniors are priced out of their homes because of property taxes. And I have proposed, for instance, fixing Nelson Rockefeller's 50-year-old mistake, which is forcing the counties and the city of New York to pay for Medicaid costs that in most states are borne by the state government. It was never intended that the property taxpayers would have to pay this significant burden. And 42% on average of the county property taxes in our district comes from Medicaid burden, and the counties have no control over it. So I have proposed this. The very first bill I'm going to introduce, if I am honored to be elected to the represent the people of the 19th district, is to end over a five-year period the ability of a state to impose this burden on the local property taxpayers. I went back and I read the law, and I read the federal law, and it's very plain that this federal law permits states to impose part of that burden on the counties. New York went well beyond what any other state did. In the whole country, $9 billion is spent by local governments on Medicaid. $7.5 billion is spent by local governments in New York State. It's just another example of how out of whack New York is. So just because Nelson Rockefeller did it 50 years ago doesn't mean we shouldn't try to fix it now. So I have substantive plans to help small business investment, immediate expensing of their equipment and other purchases for their businesses so they can employ jobs, and a plan to reduce the property tax burden that is driving so many of our people out of state. I think that's what people are looking for, someone who has experience in how to do these things and get things done, and I think I'm the person who would be best suited to represent this district for those reasons.
I want to address two different things in the answer. First of all, I support Hillary Clinton for president. But one of the reasons that I feel so strongly about representing this district is I've shown in the past that I'm always willing to be independent when I disagree. And there's plenty that I disagree with the top of the ticket on. But I showed 2 years ago when I ran against Andrew Cuomo that I'm going to be independent. And I think it's really important because people are independent. They've been disappointed by both parties, both Republican and Democratic Party. And that disappointment is real, and it's for real reasons. So when I am a representative in Congress, you can expect I'm going to be listening only to the people of the district, not political parties and not big corporations. Second, I want to talk about taxes. The property taxes are out of control, and I agree with my opponent on Medicaid reimbursement. I think that's important. It's something that leaders have been talking about for several decades now, and it's absolutely something that New York should do. I talk to people everywhere I go about the property tax burden and how much it is burdening them. I do want to point out that when my opponent had a chance to represent parts of this district before he became a lobbyist, he voted for tax raises 135 times. And I also want to point out that although he lived 30 miles from Albany, he missed 1,700 votes. So he was taking a paycheck, but not showing up. For the times he did show up, he voted against equal pay. He's already had a chance to show what he's going to do when he is paid to represent. And what he's shown is that he's not going to show up. And then after missing so many votes, he cashed out and became a lobbyist.
Ms. Teachout.
Yes.
You were just talking proximity. We'll continue in that vein. You've only recently moved into the 19th Congressional District. Your critics call you a carpetbagger. We just heard your opponent a short time ago reference you as an adventurer. How do you respond to this?
Well, look, I grew up in a rural county, two counties away from the district, Windsor County. It's a dairy community. We had about 40 sheep in a good year without the coyotes and 30 chickens. Our neighbors on both sides were dairy farmers. A lot of the issues that are facing the community that I came from and were facing the community I came from are similar to the issues facing the rural communities here. But what I hear wherever I go in this district is what people really want to know is, are you going to stand up and fight for their interests, not lining up with either party line, not selling out to big corporations? Are you going to fight for us? Do you understand our issues? Are you going to listen to us? And part of the reason we have so much support is I have been working with people not just on the fracking ban, standing up against fracking and for our water, but also in the opt-out movement, which I feel very strongly about. Common Core has been a disaster in our schools, and I've been working with parents and teachers and community members around this district standing up for opt-out and also recruiting parents and teachers to run for office, recruiting more women to run for office so we can actually change the conversation about education. And I've been working against both the Constitution pipeline and the NED pipeline. So, you know, last spring I was sitting on Church Street in Chatham talking to 40 people about how can we bring more renewable energy here? How can we get more investment in renewable energy here? I'm a ground-up grassroots person. I'll always represent people, not the powerful interests. And that's what I hear, and that's what I'm going to do in Congress, is continue to be sitting in kitchens, listening to people about what they really care about, and taking those voices and raising those voices up when I go to Washington. My opponent has shown how he represents. As I said before, he missed 1,700 votes, and in the votes that he made, it was against equal pay and for raising taxes.
Mr. Passo.
Well, I'll tell you, it really is amazing to me, 1,700 votes. Well, in the time I was in the legislature, my voting percentage was 97%, which even in Professor Teachout's classroom probably would get an A+. The fact is, I had a 97% voting record. The votes I missed because I was excused for legislative business. And, you know, I did miss a number of votes at the end of session, about 104 at the end of session one year, because my wife was being operated on for cancer. And I think I was at the right place, Ms. Teachout. I was at the right place at her side in the hospital, worrying about her and our two children instead of being sitting in the assembly. And I think that's really a below the belt kind of thing. It really is something. You know, someone comes into this district, flies in, she talks about votes. She had the very first time to vote in her school board election this year, because they don't do that in Brooklyn. She wasn't accustomed to it. She didn't show up to vote for her own school board election. So how much does she really care? Equal pay? I fully support equal pay for equal work. It's the law for 50 years in this country. And the bottom line is, my own mother was disadvantaged as an assistant branch manager and training young men to be branch managers. She knew more than them. She didn't get the job because she was a woman. So I fully understand the issue there. But just like you can't tell a book by its cover, you can't tell a bill in Shelley Silver's assembly by what title they gave it. And the title they gave that was equal pay. It wasn't. It was not equal pay for equal work. It was equal pay for different work. It would have subjected our small businesses, our farmers, to litigation and enforcement from the Department of Labor. No standards whatsoever. So it really does, it is kind of galling to listen to some of these things, but you expect it in politics. And I expect that the voters of this district, with this new adventurer in the district, will come up with other things. But this is what it is. This is why she's got no basis running here. You know, New York City's a great place. It's already got 13 congressmen. We don't need to give them a 14th from our district.
The 19th Congressional District includes the Hoosick Falls area, where residents have been grappling with water polluted by PFOA. Recent state and level hearings on the contamination and its fallout have left many residents unsatisfied. John Faso, if elected, what would you do on the federal level to address the situation, which clearly has ramifications across the state?
It's a great question, and I've talked to so many people in Hoosick Falls about what they've gone through and what they've experienced, and it shows, number one, the failure of state and federal regulators to take the authority they already had in the law, and why the state health department issued an advisory in December of 14 that the water was safe to drink, when a Google search, as Steve McLaughlin has pointed out and others have pointed out, a Google search would have been able to recover information that there was definitely a problem with PFOA and the accelerated levels of PFOA. The Congress, in the last session, actually on a bipartisan basis, updated the Toxic Substances Act. It's a 40-year-old statute that was long in need of updating, and I think this is an opportunity for us to continue to make sure that we have the right bureaucratic responses, but also that we're investigating the chemicals that like PFOA, were not being truly tracked and evaluated. So I think this was a failure of bureaucracy at the state level and at the federal level. It's a shame that they spend their times pointing fingers at each other rather than trying to figure out how do we fix this problem, and more importantly, how do we avoid this problem in the future. But it again brings to mind the fact that I believe in limited government. My opponent, she believes in big government. And she talks a lot about making big banks lend to small business, et cetera. The fact of the matter is that virtually every one of her proposals in her economic plan basically make it so that the small business person is disadvantaged. She wants a $15 minimum wage, which will kill family farmers. And it'll really help the farm-to-table movement, except it's in Pennsylvania, because our farmers are going to be priced out of the labor market. They can't afford what she's talking about. And this is, it goes again, she's completely unrealistic in her plans and her approaches, because she comes from a New York City-centric point of view. And as I said, look at some of the foreign policy. She supports the Iran deal. Iran just was given a ransom of $400 million in cash in euros and Swiss francs on a pallet that the U.S. sent over there from Europe to the Iranians as a ransom to get our hostages free. We also sent over another almost $1 billion to the Iranians for this deal. The Iranians cannot be trusted. She even criticized Chuck Schumer for voting against the Iran deal. So I think on so many issues, whether it's her faulty research about my missing votes, by the way, tax increases, I'm one of the biggest tax cutters that ever was in the state legislature in the time I was there. And I was also one of the most fiscally responsible people. I was responsible for the first budget in 52 years in this state to actually reduce spending on a year-to-year basis. And you know what? $19.5 trillion of debt in Washington, we need someone to go down there and cut the budget.
Ms. Teachout, it will surprise no one in this room to know
that.
I'm sorry.
I believe the question was about Hoosick Falls, which I want to take some time to talk about because it is a truly devastating crisis in both Hoosick Falls and in Petersburg. And I spent a lot of time talking to community members there. There's a wonderful leader there who's a mom, and what she talks about is those 18 months where her kid was swimming in the water, where she was like getting a glass of water for her daughter. And it turns out the state knew that there was something wrong with the water that whole time. Everybody is to blame in Hoosick Falls. The hearings I have been to have been incredibly frustrating because there's a lot of finger pointing and no responsibility taking. The state and the federal government have to take responsibility. I have called for federal hearings with subpoena power, but I think we also need to move past that and actually have real concrete solutions that are going to mean something to people there. That means medical monitoring. And when I am in Congress, I will be fighting for a fund to pay both for medical monitoring, ongoing medical monitoring, because, I mean, you talk to parents there who are really worried about the ongoing levels of PFOAs, as well as a response to the real health crises. I am going to stand up for clean water. And I think this is about something more than just Hoosick Falls. Our water is threatened across the board. I was talking to a young mother of just a 8-month-old, and she said, I've been trying to take a blow dryer and blow dry drops of water off of my milk bottle. She says, I know that's crazy, but she's come to fear water because of the recent water scandals. And we have to do everything we can to make sure that polluters pay and we stand up to those big polluters.
Thank you.
Ms. Teachout, it will surprise no one in, excuse me, in this room to know that the polls of late have been dominated by disappointment in government.
Yeah.
In some polls, Congress has ratings in the single digits. You've discussed what you want to do with campaign finance reform. What else would you do to improve the reputation of government if you're elected?
Yeah, well, I hate to say it, I sort of share those polls' view that Congress is really broken. It's broken and it's gridlocked and corrupted both at the same time. And I really believe in that basic democratic promise of representation, raising up people's voices, making sure their voices are heard. There are opportunities to work across the aisle in some limited areas. And when I am in Congress, I'll tell you the kinds of things I want to work on. One is independent businesses. And I started to talk about some of the parts of my independent business platform, which I think are extremely important. Another is broadband. And we have a rural crisis with broadband and cell service right now. It's really holding back our rural economies across the country. FDR in the 1930s came together with Republican rural senators to push through what was called the Rural Electrification Act, saying, you know what, by hook or by crook, we're going to figure out how to get electricity to every last farmhouse because of rural poverty. I think it's time for an updated REA, Rural Electrification Act, where we focus on getting broadband and cell service everywhere. But here's the rub. This is something that should not be a partisan issue. The opponents of this are the big companies like Comcast that have bought lobbyists, like my opponent, and paid lobbyists to push for keeping the cable industry really tight, basically, if not a monopoly, just two big companies that are really dominating the market. I believe in more open markets, and I believe that we should have more competition, more choices, that you as a consumer should have the choice between different service providers. This is an area where I have a real history. I was part of fighting for network neutrality, which makes sure that our big cable companies don't limit, tell you what your politics are. But this is also an area where there shouldn't be a partisan divide on that. Also, Common Core. As I hope your listeners know by now, I have been a strong opponent of high-stakes testing and Common Core. That is not a partisan issue. That's an issue where Bill Gates, basically a bazillionaire, spent a lot of money to try to push a top-down idea, and it's an example of federal overreach. It's not working. It's actually becoming a real problem for recruitment in our schools. And when I am in Congress, I can work and will be working across the aisle to say, not only enough with the high-stakes testing, but what should education look like? What should federal education look like? How can we be supporting safe, secure schools for all of our kids? I'm a big believer in sports, in schools, in music, and thank you.
Well, thank you. And you've heard my opponent castigate me as a lobbyist a couple of times. And as a point of information, I think your listeners and viewers should know that the most prominent client, and I didn't have many, but the most prominent client I represented in the last 5 years was Autism Speaks. And I represented Autism Speaks and had a major role in writing a state law which enhanced health insurance coverage for children with autism. And I was their advocate, and I was someone that was out there fighting for them every day. In terms of their needs and the needs of autistic children and for children on the spectrum. So I think that the overall issue that we face in our country today and the overall issue that upstate New York faces is how do you get more growth in the economy? We're growing at about 1.3% GDP a year. And what this means is that we will, within 10 years, every nickel of federal money going into the Treasury, of taxpayer money going into the Treasury, is going to go for Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and interest on the debt. If we do not get more growth, we will not be able to fulfill our obligations to seniors and veterans, much less provide the opportunities for our children and grandchildren to find prosperity and happiness and hope in our country. So this is what is going on in our country today, and I think in our district, the support for Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump in the primary was a manifestation of the economic frustration that exists. But I have a serious plan to build the small business economy, a serious plan to end the overregulation, which is, you talk about banks, it's the little and the medium-sized banks that are getting crushed by regulation from Dodd-Frank. I had one banker in this district who told me, I've hired all these two extra people, I spend $80,000 a year just for compliance, and they prepare reports that no one reads. That's the problem that is stifling small business in our state.
Mr. Passo, during your run for governor a decade ago, you opposed same-sex marriage and abortion. Where do you stand on those issues today?
Well, I recognize that the issue of abortion is a very contentious issue in our society. It always has been for the last 43 years. My position has always been that I have some moral objection to it, but I've always supported exceptions for rape, incest, life of the mother, and I've not supported taxpayer-funded abortions. But I also recognize the law is the law, And Roe v. Wade has been the law of the land for many years, and it's been upheld by the Supreme Court, and I respect the law. So I'm not running for Congress to change that law. The second thing I would point out is that you asked about same-sex marriage. That is now the law as well. It was democratically adopted in New York State, and that is, I fully respect the law, and I have many friends of mine that have taken advantage of that law. But I think, again, the point, the reason I'm running for Congress is not to get in a debating society, and this is one of the problems in our country today. The left watches MSNBC, the right watches Fox, and then maybe some of them both watch or listen to WAMC, except when Alan is on. But the fact is that people are talking past one another. And we've got to get people come to common ground. And just like Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill came up with a plan to save Social Security for 40 years, that's the kind of model that we have to pursue. We've got to find ways that we're going to get more growth in our economy. Because think of it. We have $19.5 trillion of debt. $19.5 trillion. We are passing these costs onto our kids and grandchildren. It is amoral to do that. That's what we've got to fix. If we do not fix this, we are not going to be able to be a country that's strong domestically, nor will we be able to have the traditional strength of our military in the world, which we need for our security. And we've got to fight Islamic extremism. And, you know, my opponent supporting the Iranian deal, her support for the BDS movement, which wants to boycott and divest and sanction Israel, I think is an outrage. Israel is our strongest ally in the Middle East. And I think we've got to work with countries in the Middle East militarily and diplomatically with shared intelligence to confront ISIS. And I've not heard anything from my opponent about she supports the Iran deal. She thinks Chuck Schumer was wrong. She gives aid and comfort to the enemies of Israel. You know, a month after the two New York City cops were gunned down in their car in 2014, a month after, she said she praised the Black Lives Matter movement as a moral and thoughtful movement. And they, if you read their platform, you see how anti-Semitic many parts of that movement are. So I think she's got radical views that are not in step and in tune with the people of this district. She's way to the far left, should never be effective in Congress if she got there.
I think the question was about same-sex marriage.
And abortion.
And I want to address those directly. In 2006, my opponent did not just say that he was privately opposed to same-sex marriage. He said that if a bill came to his desk supported by the legislature in New York State, he would veto that bill, imposing his own views on New York State. I feel very strongly about civil rights for all Americans. And I would not have vetoed that bill, and I was strongly supportive of same-sex marriage. Second, the questions about, look, I have, and we all have friends who have very different private views on abortion, and I really respect those different private views. But I feel very strongly that it is not the government's business to basically tell women what they can't do with their body, that it is a private choice. And I also feel very strongly that we have to actively be supporting the work that Planned Parenthood does in providing basic health services, and the overwhelming majority of the services they provide are basic health services, cancer screening. These are very live issues right now, and they're very live issues in Congress. There's a bunch of Republicans who are actually stopping funding for Zika because they don't want any money to go to women's health clinics, including Planned Parenthood. That is so wrong. We have a Zika crisis, and in Congress, it's very clear where I would stand, and if you look at my opponent's record, it looks pretty clear where he would stand, that he would be on the side of those who are opposing a funding for Zika because of the women's health clinic funding.
Thank you.
Okay, we're now going to get to a question, and Mr. Fasso actually alluded to it in this last question. The so-called boycott, divest, sanction movement aims to economically punish Israel for its policies in the occupied West Bank. Should Congress and/or individual states move against the BDS movement by imposing sanctions on the groups or institutions that take part in it? Ms. Teachout?
Thanks for the question, because I wanted to clarify. My opponent said something that wasn't true, but I wanted to stick on the last question. I oppose the BDS movement. And I'm a strong supporter of Israel. I'm a strong supporter of a two-state solution. I think the United States has a very important role in moving towards a two-state solution. In foreign policy more generally, the United States faces three really very serious threats. One is the threat of either Iran or North Korea getting a nuclear weapon. The reason that I support the Iran deal is because we cannot allow Iran to have a nuclear weapon. It is too much of a threat. It's a year in, and it has been successful. The uranium stockpiles are down 98%. The centrifuges are down two-thirds. We're talking about actual dismantling. We are farther away from a nuclear Iran than we were a year ago, and that is incredibly important. It's equally important, by the way, that we address the real threat of North Korea getting a nuclear weapon. And there, we have to be using our leverage with China, because China simply isn't doing enough. The second real threat to us is terrorism, is ISIS. And ISIS is so threatening both because it is gaining territory and because it is what experts call an inspirational movement, encouraging others to take action, even without having a direct connection to the ISIS organization in Syria or elsewhere. I believe strongly that we have to use our special capacities in Syria and do everything that we can to defeat ISIS in Syria. And the third threat is about a balance of power. And this is an area where I feel very strongly that our trade deals, including our trade relationship with China and NAFTA and other countries, have actually weakened us globally. This is a problem. The core reason that I support renegotiating our trade deals is because we've got to bring jobs home. But the other reason is because it's shifted the balance of power. And I think when we look towards renegotiating our trade deals, we have to have strong relationships with allies, but not create such dependency like the $1 billion a day trade deficit with China, that we are actually become weaker when there are confrontations in the Pacific Rim.
Thank you. Mr. Passo?
I think the BDS movement is abhorrent. I think it is against our interests, and it's against the interests of our ally Israel. And I support measures that would sanction the BDS movement. And we've done this before in New York State. We've done this before nationally, vis-a-vis the apartheid movement. Those that companies and businesses that supported apartheid, or those that were did not subscribe to the McBride principles in Northern Ireland. So there's precedent for it. And I think BDS. Ms. Teachout wants to have it both ways. After she was caught on this issue, then she hurriedly rushed to proclaim her support for Israel. But she has a history, frankly, both in the campaign for governor and in this campaign, in her primary, of being unwilling to take a strong stand in support of Israel. And I think that's very troublesome. The fact is that we've got to rebuild our national defenses, and we've got to avoid the cuts that are expected on the military. Chris Gibson has been very in the forefront on this in Congress, and he's been very, very effective at it. And it's one of the reasons why I'm very pleased to have his support in this race, because he's someone that has been a strong spokesman for our district, and he's been able to also be a strong spokesman for our military. But we also have the specter of Ms. Teachout's supporter Bernie Sanders coming here tomorrow, saying that Mr. Snowden, who's a traitor to the United States, should get clemency. You know, she belongs to the far left side of the political equation. Were she to go to Congress, she would be the political equivalent of the Freedom Caucus on the Republican side. And so you have these radical fringes in both parties that frankly can't get anything done, because they're not willing to talk to the other side and to collaborate. We have to get tax reform. We have to get end the regulatory mess that we currently have in Washington. That's how we get jobs back here.
Mr. Fasso, a question on two related gun control proposals that have been floating around for a couple of years now. Do you believe that individuals whose names appear on the federal no-fly list should be barred, at least temporarily, from purchasing firearms? And do you support legislation to federally close the so-called gun show loophole?
I support the Second Amendment, but that doesn't mean that I would want terrorists to be able to purchase weapons. And the question on the watch list is whether or not there's a due process means by which individuals who are falsely or incorrectly put on the watch list have a means to get off. And that's the question, and that's the issue that has to be confronted. So, yes, I think if we can come up with an approach on this which will ensure that there are due process rights for people that are incorrectly placed on the watch list, then I'm all for it, because there's no way I would support terrorists being able to purchase firearms. I don't think that additional federal gun laws are necessarily the solution to the problem. I would like to see more penalties, however, for trafficking of weapons. I'd like to see automatic penalties for people that commit a crime with a firearm. And look at the places around our country which have very strict gun laws, like Chicago, but they have skyrocketing murder rates because they have not been able to effectively police and they have not been able to effectively get the weapons off the streets. One of the big issues also that we're facing here, which is very important to me in this district, is the whole issue of heroin and opioid abuse. I've laid out a plan, a strategy of education, treatment, and enforcement to deal with this. There is no doubt, and this is one of those areas where I think Democrats and Republicans can work together and agree, heroin doesn't discriminate between male, female, black, white, gay, straight. The fact of the matter is it is affecting every community. No matter where I go throughout the 11 counties in the 19th Congressional District, I will talk about it, and some will come up to me afterwards and tell me about a situation in their family or a friend or neighbor that has been affected by this. So it's an extraordinarily important issue for us to address. Another local district issue that I want to address, just like Chris Gibson, is Lyme disease. We've got the 21st Century Cures Act, which Chris was essential in getting a Lyme disease prevention segment in that bill. I'm hopeful that that will pass both houses of Congress this year, but it's an issue that I'm going to take up the battle and to make sure that we've got effective treatments and diagnosis for Lyme disease.
Just to be clear, on the gun show loophole, would you support legislation that would close that on the federal level or not?
I think that legislation is not going to be effective, so I'm not going to be supportive of that. But the bottom line is that I think what we've got to do in terms of violence in our society is we have to enforce the laws that we have. And the laws that we have are not being enforced in many cases, and we have to have automatic strict penalties at the state level for those who commit crimes of violence with firearms.
I support closing the gun show loophole, and I also think that we should make sure that those who are on the no-fly list also become on the no-buy list. I grew up in a rural county where my dad had a rifle for hunting. All the men in my family hunt, but we also had another gun for getting the raccoons who were getting into our chickens, and I think it's really important that any laws are respectful and understand that a gun is a tool and an essential part of our way of life. The heroin crisis is devastating. The deaths are up 3 times since 2000. And I was talking to a father in Kingston who talked about the day his son came home and said, "I want to get help. I need help." And he basically spent a week on the phone with insurance companies trying to find a bed for him and getting approval from the insurance companies. He couldn't get it. His son went back, and his son has since overdosed. Part of addressing this crisis is addressing the insurance company's role, and part of addressing our broader health crisis right now, which is people not being able to afford basic medication. Seniors paying out of pocket outrageous amounts for drugs, or a mother I was talking to in Tannersville whose daughter, who has cystic fibrosis, her drug costs $300,000 a year, and nobody thinks it should cost that much. If we're going to be addressing these core health issues, we got to do what I have always done, which is raise up people's voices and take on those powerful drug companies who hire lobbyists, like my opponent, to basically allow them to be in a position where they can charge outrageous fees. The real problem with our country right now isn't on the ground. It's because of big companies hiring well-paid lobbyists to push their issues.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's all the time we have for today's debate between the candidates for New York's 19th Congressional District. Very impressive debate. Republican John Faso and Democrat Zephyr Teachout. I'd like to thank the candidates and our panelists, Casey Seiler of the Times Union, Benita Zahn of News Channel 13, and Allison Dunn of WMC. I want to give a special shout out to our Ian Pickus, who did all the hard work putting this thing together. I'm Alan Chartok, and now we can have a round of applause for the candidates.